Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Daniel Rubin. This show is going to be a behind-the-scenes show. As I said before, 2017, I'm really trying to focus on the people behind the bands that you guys love. Daniel manages a bunch of bands, and one of which I'm a sincere fanboy to, Eye of the Mighty. I saw them open for Armor for Sleep, and I actually thought that they showed them up. So, much respect, and we can also talk about Eric Ron, who is killing it and working on so many great records, including Eye of the Mighty. So this is a big day for me and Waldman's Words. The next few weeks are pretty stacked. We've got Megan Thompson at Hopeless Records coming to the studio, and she is actually known as Picture Taker Thompson. She does a lot of the photographs for the label, which has Sum 41, a band I'm sure you've been hearing a lot lately, Moose Blood, and lots of other bands that are killing it. I'm a huge fan of Bayside Newfound Glory. So, Johnny Minardi over at Equal Vision, speaking of Eye the Mighty, he's going to be here. He's also A&R'd in the past for Fueled by Ramen. So if you were listening to music in 2005, I'm sure you've heard a few of the bands that he has personally oversaw. We've got Bruce Duff, who is an industry veteran, probably more so than Daniel and I combined. He's been doing this for a long, long time. He manages bands and works at a label. It's actually Knitting Factory Records and Knitting Factory Management. And when I moved to LA in 2003, my old band, The City Drive, used to play at the Knitting Factory over at the Hollywood Highland area before it got completely gentrified and safe. When I moved to LA, people would tell me to avoid that area because of all the crackheads. And now it's just a bunch of superhero costumes. So it's kind of like the LA Times Square. And the following week, we've got Mark and Eric from Word is Bond Management to talk about their roster, which is about 730 bands. I've got 5 bands, and I have no idea how they can do more than that. It's a lot. You're probably getting a lot of random texts about their computer shutting down that they have to go fix. So, as always, stick around for Waldman's Words every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. It's been a really good year, and it's only getting better. And just in case you're curious about the bands on my roster, Mirror Eyes, as you know, rebranded as Floods, and they're going to hit the studio in early April. Candy Hearts has a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, so stay tuned to their socials. Boomtown Crooks is killing it with their live shows, and they're hitting the road in mid-April, going from LA to Canada. So I hope they don't get stopped at the border, because they're notorious for doing such to a lot of bands on the road. And Film Speed is recording an album. So stick around. We've got Daniel Rubin on after these lovely commercials. We are back with an almost cough from Daniel Rubin, who is in the studio right now for his therapy session.
Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here.
Good to be here. So we have about 50 minutes, and then you're off the clock, and you have to just pay the money on the counter.
Okay, great. And at the same time next week, right?
Yeah, every single Tuesday at the same exact time, even though it's Wednesday. I'm just so used to saying Tuesday with Waldman's Words. That's really funny. Anyway, like Tuesdays with Maury.
Right.
So how did we meet? I know, but I want to see if you remember.
How do we meet? As I recall, I believe it was a Facebook message. A very welcomed Facebook message. And I think within the week, you and I were having a lovely breakfast.
Swingers.
At Swingers. I'm always happy to grab a meal with a fellow tribesman.
Fist pound.
Yeah, we just fist pounded to Judaism. And, you know.
Do you have the 4 questions on tap? Like, I'd love to discuss those.
The what?
The 4 questions.
Which are the 4 questions?
Manishtana.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not that deep.
Damn.
But I appreciate
I'm from
that.
Long Island. It's a little bit different.
Right. But yeah, that's how we met. How is your recollection?
I mean, that's pretty much identical. I reached out to you kind of like I'm on Bumble. Like, I'm the girl reaching out to the guy and saying, hey, you're doing stuff I like.
Right.
Do you want to meet with me somewhere? And you're like, who is this new phone? And then we met up and we had a nice breakfast and we talked about.
You sure it wasn't Craigslist? We didn't meet on Craigslist?
We were actually a misconnection.
Okay.
I thought I saw you at the Beverly Center at the Victoria's Secret store.
Okay.
But you looked really good.
I thought it was like a couch trading for a free cuddle session type of deal.
The number one rule of improv is to never correct the person that you're improvising against.
Damn it, learn something new.
No, no, but it was a couch. Okay. It was actually a misconnection on a couch somewhere in the Echo Park area.
Okay,
but I tell you this just quickly before we talk about topical things. I always feel like the least cool person at Swingers. Every time I walk to that Swingers, everyone is dressed to the nines and looks really good.
That was my first time there, actually.
Have you been there since?
I haven't been there since, and I should because my office is two blocks away, and it's kind of like an LA staple.
It's definitely a staple. They actually have one on the west side, too, which isn't as cool. The one there, I think when I first moved to LA, I saw Sean Lennon there with Kelly Osbourne.
That's a great reason to go there every morning, then.
Rock royalty. Well, chances are they will totally be there in the morning. So you are from Northern California, I believe, right? I don't want to screw this up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess talk to me about your upbringing there and your musical endeavors.
Sure. So I grew up in San Mateo, California, which is a suburb right in between San Francisco and San Jose, which was nice because it's kind of the best of both worlds. There's a lot of indie rock shows going on in the San Francisco area. There's a lot of more, punk, hardcore.
San Jose skate, right?
Yeah, happening at San Jose. So, throughout high school, I kind of got involved with the local production company that put on all ages shows there at a super early age. So
is that Pinup?
That is Pinup, right?
Our boy, Mr. Kutsenda. I think that was actually our gateway drug.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Gave me mad cred.
So we used to put on shows at this really incredible spot called San Jose Skate, which was essentially just a massive roller rink. And with a ticket, you would also get a pair of skates. So in between set changes or, if you, didn't want to stand and watch one of the opening bands, you can literally just skate around with your friends, and it was really cool.
And they had lots and lots of legit bands playing there. It wasn't just a local band spot.
Definitely. I think we had, 500 people in there for Bayside one time, and it's really, a little side area where where the standing room is really only supposed to fit, maybe a couple hundred. So it was a really good time, and it just got me involved meaningfully and around music at an early age. And, this kind of sort of deal where I knew I wanted to work in music from an early age. I didn't quite know what side of the industry I wanted to work in. And that's kind of what I spent the next couple of years doing, is trying to approach and get a look from different angles to figure out exactly what facet of music I wanted to work in. But
how old were you when you started working with Andrew and up in San Jose?
I must have been 16, 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so much better than my job at the supermarket.
I was just so excited to be around it all. And, Andrew was absolutely my first mentor, and whether it was ticket counts or running around and dropping tickets off, or just sitting in on the brainstorm sessions with him and his team, I just loved it, and I was addicted to it, and I just wanted to dig further and further in at an early age. So I'm definitely grateful for that, it's kind of carried on from there.
He's a good guy. I mean, from being in a touring band and dealing with a lot of talent buyers and payouts, he was always really fair, and he was very generous with bands that were touring. He did not have to be. So yeah. I have love for that guy, and every time he's in LA, he buys me lunch. So I'm flattered. Another reason to love him. And he knows really good Asian spots up in the San Jose area.
That's very true.
I didn't even know how cool San Jose was until I would go up there and play roller rink.
Yeah.
So I guess that was your gateway drug into the industry. Did you work at Hopeless as well, or did you work at... I'm not 100% certain on this.
I moved down to Long Beach to go to Cal State Long Beach, and I tried the school thing for a year or two, and I genuinely loved it. I think things got to a point where it's pretty clear I had to, either focus on, my career in music or continue to focus on school. Long story short, when I moved down, I ended up in Andy Serrao's office, who he now is an owner in Chain Reaction. He puts on like Self-Help Fest.
And he has his own record
Chain
label
Fest.
Now, too.
Right. Now he's vice president of Pure Noise Records.
The Weekday Records, too.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Same camp. You know, they just launched a new label out of there. I was actually just over there last week hanging with him. And, you know, I'm stoked for all the plans they're putting together. And Andy was, you know, my first kind of mentor down here in L.A., and as wound up in his office, you know, I tried putting on a couple of shows, like Tuesday, Wednesday nights at Chain, realized that being a promoter is pretty awful, and, you know, wanted to look at things from a different kind of angle. Andy helped hook me up with Eric Tobin at Hopeless, and I was Tobin's intern, assistant, booked his flights, did the expenses, sent out sound scans, and it was really nice spending some time there. I mean, I think a lot of my like organizational practices that I have to this day, I learned from Tobin. And this was like maybe five years ago now. This was when I was 19.
Did you leave school at that point? Or were
no,
you,
I was okay. still in school. So I was driving up to Van Nuys from Long Beach three, four days a week. Oh, it. I mean, I'm actually fortunate for it because I feel that experience made me numb to driving. Like sometimes an hour and a half to 2 hours each way. And I just got really into podcasts. And
I do books on tape, man.
Books
I'm telling
on tape,
you.
For sure. Great. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm learning something while I'm miserable.
Yeah. So I did spend time at Hopeless, and it was funny when I mean, I had a little bit of a longer beard and I had longer hair back then. So when Tobin and I would go out to a show together, people would stop us and ask if I'm his little brother or nephew or something, which is a great compliment. Very handsome man.
He's a looker.
Very handsome man.
I thought they were
going to
say, are you in 4 years strong?
And yeah, so that was cool. After that, I had a brief stint at The Collective. I was, you know, intern assisting, kind of in the mix with Joey Simran, who was the rock guy over there at the time. And at the time, he was doing Destroy, Rebuild, Until God shows and Attack, Attack. He's still doing Architects to this day, and, you know, a couple different bands over there. And around that time, or I guess throughout this, I had a couple of artists that I was managing independently and just kind of like, you know, taking a swing at it. And two of them got like baby record deals at the same time. I realized I should probably start focusing on that because it was taking a lot of my time to, you know, make sure that those artists had my attention.
Which artists were those?
Billy Candler, who runs a company called Absolute Merch now, he was in Andy's office when I met him, and he had a band called Secrets signing to Rise
right.
the same time that I had I the Mighty signing to Equalvision. So, you know, we kind of said, hey, we work in the same office. We're buds. We both have band signing deals. Why don't we share an email address and throw it up on a website? And it was really nothing more than that at first. You know, that actually grew in the span of, you know, 2 or 3 years after me leaving school and, you know, leaving my assistant jobs to focus on management.
I'm sure your parents were stoked. The Jewish parents were stoked.
My Jewish parents were very upset. Well, actually, it was
my mother would have murdered me.
It was all right because my parents are very fair and they are understanding to a degree. So my parents' policy with me. Right. So with me leaving school, they kind of said, hey, we love you. We're not going to let you starve. But if you want to take a stab at this big boy music biz thing and you want to leave school, then that means you should probably be able to pay for your own shit. So it's like a nice way of saying, we're not going to let you starve, but you're cut off. And I really had nothing to say to that. I'm like, you know, I get it. You're right. If I'm like taking the step to leave school, I should probably be able to pay for myself. And I haven't had, you know, a quote, real job with a real paycheck, you know, since I was 16. It's always been management, and it's always been a thing where I've found a way to make it work.
But you're also interning, and you're working towards it. And
right.
I can't say enough about that. No job is too small when you're starting out. A lot of people, I feel, have their pride. They don't want to hand out flyers. They don't want to book flights for someone.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first 2 years when I moved down to LA and I was, you know, freshman, sophomore in college, I just wanted to get involved and intern everywhere I could, meet enough people. I spent a lot of time taking people to lunch with cold emails. Like, hey, I'm a fan of what you do. Can I pick your brain and buy you a meal? It's surprising how many people in this industry will respond so positively to that sort of thing.
You did to me. You did it to me, so you're literally paying it forward.
Sure, look at that. I guess that's so.
Sure is the least confident, yes. So I appreciate that. So I guess you got Eye the Mighty, the deal with Equal Vision. I believe they're still on Equal Vision, cutting another record as we speak,
they
right?
They are.
That's amazing. I guess talk about Too Close to Touch, because I hear some cool news about them recently, so I'd love to hear about them.
Yeah, Too Close has been a really fun project to work on over the last 2 years. The way that came about, I manage a producer-writer. His name is Eric Ron. And
look at number 5 on this sheet.
Oh, yeah, that is there. So I've been working with Eric for a couple of years, and it's been amazing to see his trajectory in terms of, like, the records that he's worked on the last year. And, you know, when he develops something or brings something in at an early stage, you know, we're happy that, you know, it catches the, you know, the eyeballs and ears of some people.
Doesn't he manage New Year's Day, too?
He does manage New Year's Day. He's also a manager.
I did my research.
Yeah. So something that Eric and I have been working on for a few years is in between the records that he does, the signed label projects, whatever it is we're working on, if we have a couple weeks in between, we'll bring in, you know, a talented band that has potential, that, you know, it kind of is in, like, the, you know, inquiring about making a couple of songs folder, you know, bands that reach out. And it's kind of been a really nice way to develop something together where we bring in a project that has a bunch of potential. Eric takes it under his wing musically, obviously. I take it under my wing kind of like, you know, visually with the branding, you know, helping kind of carry out the artist's initial vision. And that's the way Too Close came into the mix. You know, we made a bunch of really special songs, you know, we feel are super special, and they signed with Epitaph before they played their first show, which is
it's a big deal,
which is a pretty crazy you know, thing if you think about it. I mean, like, obviously there's so many different stories of how to attract or approach you know, a dream label. But
and that is the dream label, just so you know, especially to the punk rock kid going to Warped in 98.
Definitely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Epitaph is such an incredible pleasure to work with. But I think it's kind of a testament to there's a million ways that it can happen for a band, for any of the bands listening now. But it's kind of a testament to the fact that the music is kind of the end all. You know what I mean? If a song, or if your songs, like, you know, are really something that is undeniable, you know, then it's going to come together. I truly believe that the cream rises to the top in the sense that people are out there listening, and it's always a great idea to focus on your craft. And also, you know, work with producers that you look up to and respect.
And work with a team.
Right. So, yeah, that's kind of how they came together. But
if you put cologne on a turd, it's still a turd.
That absolutely, it is still a turd. So that's kind of how that band came together. We've been working for
Kentucky, right?
They're from Lexington, Kentucky. That's right. We've been working together for 2 years now. They recently put out their second record on Epitaph called "Haven't Been Myself" last September, and you know, it's been a really cool ride. It's been really awesome to see things come together pretty meaningfully for them in the last couple months, especially.
Well, they just got off a co-headlining tour with Waterparks that I heard a lot of the shows were actually sold out.
Yeah, it was amazing. So it was the first headlining experience for them. It was a co-headline tour with Waterparks, and it was the first headlining experience for Waterparks as well. It just kind of made sense where, you know, Too Close was coming off of the Crown the Empire tour last fall. Waterparks is coming off the Sleeping with Sirens tour last fall. Sonically, I think the band are completely different, but
beyond different.
Yeah, I guess some bridges though is that you know, both bands got a lot of early alternative press love, and it seemed online like their you know, audiences cross pollinated, and I think that
I love that word.
Yeah, I think nowadays diverse bills on a tour is proving to be a good idea. You know,
like Warped.
like Warped, right, which I know we'll talk about here soon. But you know, whether you saw it like in the past with I think it was like yellow card and Memphis May fire, or the, you know, originally the idea of all time low and Pierce the Veil was kind of weird, and now it's kind of more commonplace to match bands that might share fans but are a bit sonically just different. It's more fun, it's more exciting, and you know, the tour did so incredibly well. I think you know, it did over 95% sold out business across the board.
That's
insane. I
think there
were really only like four shows
for two bands doing their very first headline tour. That's massive.
Yeah, I mean, there really were only, I think, like four shows that didn't sell out. I mean, they were only in three to like 350 to 500 cap rooms, but it's just nice because we didn't really know what to expect matching the bands together, going out and headlining for the first time. And you know, it's cool to know that in New York, for example, we just kind of upgraded the studio at Webster, which is a 400 cap.
Was it to Marlin?
We upgraded to Marlin when Webster at 400 sold out, and then Marlin at 600 sold out, and then we released an extra 150 tickets to pack in there. So we sold 750 tickets in New York, and it's just kind of crazy to think that like some of these other rooms we might have been able to push even further.
And New York's a tough market, man. There's so much to do in New York City,
right.
So it's great.
So I know the bands had a great time. I mean, the water parks guys are awesome, and you know, they're clearly you know, really, really getting a lot of attention right now, and deservedly so. So just all around positive experience. But you know, as far as like Too Close getting to where they are, you know, I think there's like a few moments along the way that kind of helped, you know, usher them into this point.
The AP award,
I think the APMA's last year, they took home the Best Underground Band Award, and that was like really out of left field for us, and a little unexpected. But you know, I think those things are so meaningful in that space.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
So we're super fortunate for all press love that they've shown from the very beginning, and you know, just looking forward to another summer out on the Vans Warped Tour. I can say that now
because
it's airing next week.
Technically, the announcement is today, but today is not today. Today is next week.
Exactly, yeah. So they just finished that headline tour, and then they're going to Slam Dunk Festival in the UK, which is their first UK appearance, and then Warped all summer, and then, you know, in the mix for some pretty big things for the fall that I can't quite talk about yet. But, you know, it's been fun to work on. I'm a genuine fan of that band, and they're some of my closest friends, and it's really nice to see things come together for that bunch of, you know, Southern gentlemen Kentucky boys.
Are they whiskey drinkers?
Very much so.
Yeah, I actually work with a band that has a member from Kentucky who is in the band Floods, formerly known as Mirror Eyes, and all he does is talk about bourbon.
Right, but then they kind of scoff if you like mention like Jack Daniels, right?
Yeah,
like, oh, well, like, yeah, you would say that.
Well, it's like, yeah, kind of in LA, the coffee and craft beer snobs. That's how they are with that.
It's also kind of like, you know, we in America know Foster's as the Australian beer.
It's garbage.
They don't drink that shit over there. It's like the biggest gimmick. It's like, oh, like Americans, you think we drink Foster's? It's quite the opposite. It's actually really funny, side note, what beers people in different countries consider to be like premium,
Guinness
high quality beers.
Guinness isn't as big in Ireland as it is here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, mostly across the world, Budweiser and Coors is like a premium, like high quality beer. And to us, it's like, like, what are you, why are you drinking a fucking Coors Light?
You walked in here with a Starbucks, man. I wanted to scoff at you. That's so pedestrian for coffee.
That wasn't a Starbucks.
Oh, it wasn't? Oh, what
you
have?
It was a clear cup, man.
What?
It was just a clear cup.
God damn it. It looked like a Starbucks.
But that was awful itself because they just poured hot coffee over a bunch of ice cubes to make my iced coffee. And then sure enough, 2 minutes later, it's just a watery, lukewarm. Anyways,
We're going to take a break in a second, but before we do, I just want to tell you something that just really grinds my gears.
Sure.
Why don't all coffee places have actual coffee ices in their iced coffee? Have you ever had a coffee where the ice is made of coffee?
I haven't. That's the greatest. But that sounds ingenious.
So when it melts, you're drinking coffee melt. Aha!
you just blew my mind.
Yeah, well, that's what I do here at Waldman's Words. So we're going to take a short break where you can listen to incredible ads brought to you by Adobe. So stick around for Daniel Rubin, my homie. We are back with Waldman's Words. Daniel Rubin is teaching me a lot of things. Thank you.
Thanks, Guy.
You're welcome, dog. So I guess we started talking about Warped, and usually I have an outline for my shows, and I showed it to him, and he was like, yeah, that's cool. But we were talking outside about the Warped lineup. So I really, really would like to touch on this, because even before, I mean, it hasn't even officially been announced, but it's already been controversial on the internet because some schmohawk leaked the lineup. So I personally like the idea of a diverse Warped Tour. I have a buddy from Minnesota, and he would tell me that shows in Minnesota are really cool because, like, you'd have a hip-hop act, you'd have a hardcore band, you'd have a bubblegum pop act. And I think it really breaks it up, as opposed to just being, like, five hardcore bands where by the time you watch the third band, you're just over it. So let's hear your take on this, Mr. Daniel.
Sure. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm super excited to have Too Close to Touch back for a second summer this year.
On a bigger stage,
that's right. But I think a few things are clear looking at this lineup. There's always been diversity in Warped lineups. That's part of the reason that makes Warped so special. yeah, you're telling me your first Warped tour in 98 featured Kid Rock, which sounds awesome.
People hated him. They hated him.
And they don't. They like him now.
Well, he's kind of gets lumped in the same category as Nickelback, which is unnecessary hate. I personally think that Kid Rock is the McCartney of his generation.
I personally love Nickelback, but that's a whole different show.
I think
that's a
not
whole
bad.
Different radio show.
People are really, really, really hateful on.
Oh,
them.
They're
really
big
not
rock bad. Songs. Dude can write a song.
I don't get there. I think it's just because of the sheeple mentality where one person lumped them in this category. Like, if you're going to hate on a band, which I'm not going to do publicly now because I try to be positive, hate on a band that's really bad. Like, oh, fuck it. Broken Side. They were bad.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
They're objectively bad.
Objectively. I think if you look up Urban Dictionary, it'd be a picture of them. Anyway, your turn. So this year, Warped Tour 2017.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying a couple things kind of stick out. While diversity has always been a big element of Warped, it's almost like doubled down this year, where there's a full stage dedicated to, you know, old school type of punk bands, and there's a lot more heavy acts. I forget what the stage is called, the previously known as Monster Stages.
The two Monster Stages.
Right.
Much. Right.
There's a lot of heavy stuff on there. I mean, between the Acacia Strain, After the Burial, Emir Gwar, Hatebreed, like
Too Close to Touch.
I mean, Too Close to Touch is on the heavy stage. I think the only scene leaning bands on there, Siler, I Prevail, Silverstein. But you know, we're all kind of like sweating. Like, I hope we don't get crushed. Following Gwar. But you know, it's gonna be an awesome, you know, sweaty summer regardless. So I think those two things kind of stand out. And I think it's, you know, an indication that Warped is reaching out to, you know, be a little bit more meaningful to a wider demo of fans.
I think they're trying to get their old people back.
Right.
Who kind of ditched it when, like, bands like Bring Me the Horizon started playing.
Yeah, that's true. And I think this year, maybe there's also a bit of an element where some of the bigger bands that have done Warped in the past, or I guess more contemporary in the last couple of years, it seems like there's a feel that, you know, they might get too big for Warped
outgrow
Warped. And, you know, that kind of sucks. I feel like in the past it's been a thing where if a band is fortunate enough to get to a certain level, they may, you know, want to come back and do a Warped tour and remain having like a toe dipped in this space. But it almost seems like, you know, Warped is a thing to graduate from and
jump off
from, right, and not really look back. And that's not right, because Warped's done so much for our community and, you know, it continues
to break. I mean, Warped is one of the reasons why Katy Perry got big.
Of course, yeah.
And Eminem.
I mean, countless stories like that, you know? I hope that mindset kind of changes. But again, this is just a perspective from, you know, someone looking in, who we're all fans of the festival, and it's so meaningful for a lot of us. So I think it's an interesting lineup. I think it's diverse. I think there's a lot of awesome stuff on it. I think it's going to be a great summer, just maybe slightly different.
It's a more diverse, and it's also a less is more, because I think they cut their lineup like in like a quarter of the lineup or something, like a monumental figure. And it's just in my opinion, I like it more than ones that are like pop punk centric or metalcore centric. It's got, it literally does have something for everyone.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm a fan, and I'll definitely be checking out Too Close to Touch immediately after GWAR.
Awesome. I hope that they follow them every day.
Every single day. They're right. going to find a way to work that out.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope they become friends.
I hope so as well. Maybe they could help them shoot the guts and blood at the crowd.
Or shoot some bourbon at the crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess I work with four producers myself. I'd love to hear what it's like managing Eric. Because, you know, managing a producer, believe it or not, from the outside, it's a lot more consistent work. When you manage a developing band, you could be waiting on some income for quite some time or never even get there.
You just nailed it, Scott. You know, for any for any up-and-coming, aspiring managers out there, I mean, it's an incredibly rewarding career path. But one thing about it that you kind of got to be prepared for is it is at the least somewhat inconsistent at times, especially, you know, financially. And the thing about working with a producer is, and I love it, it's one of my favorite gigs to work on, is you're dealing with one individual, right, who more often than not is a little bit more business-minded and strategic. Not to say that, you know, the bands I work
with
aren't...
I'll say they're usually more logical.
Right. I mean, not to say that the bands I work with aren't smart and logical and strategic. I did not say that. But, you know, it's sometimes it's just, you know, easier to kind of like talk strategy and sit down with one person. It is consistent. You have a calendar in front of you, and oftentimes as the producer, you're booking time 6 to 9 months ahead, or at least your calendar's booked up, you know, through the next 6 months, but you have targets for, you know, records you want to reach for, artists you know, would love to get your producer in with. And it's just kind of about making those connections, getting people in the room together, and, you know, hoping that, you know, they could do their thing and being creative and making something special. You know, it is more consistent in the sense that having that foresight of what your producer is working on, you know, kind of, you know, gives you an idea of how things look, and you can plan accordingly. And, you know, I think it's just it's a special kind of trajectory seeing a producer develop, much like a band does. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of strategy involved, you know, in like working a trajectory for a producer to get to a place where they do have a shot at, you know, a certain record or working with a certain
band. Or when they're
band.
Booked 9 months in advance.
Right, definitely.
That's a big deal.
You know, at some point you also have to realize that saying no to certain projects is the right move as well, which is always tough, you know, when you're, you know, there's labels that, you know, kind of, not rely, but, you know, there's labels that, you know, love working with a producer on their young acts or whatever. So, I mean, with Eric, we've had a really amazing year between, you know, the Issues record
Attila.
And Set It Off and Attila, and, you know, Siler is one we're really excited about, you know, with all of their Octane Radio success. Too Close to Touch, obviously. Coming up, he's doing the new New Year's Day record. He just finished yesterday, actually, an album for...
Wait, how does he reconcile producing New Year's Day and managing them? Because that might be a little bit of a sensitive subject.
I mean, that is something I've never understood, but I do admire Eric. In addition to producing some of you know, the favorites in the All Press Warped World, records-wise, he manages the band New Year's Day, which is great because he knows what goes into the management gig, so he kind of keeps me on my toes as his manager, which I completely welcome and love. You know, I think it's interesting, him wearing two hats, but he gets it done. So.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I try to, from being a manager to bands, not get in the way of their quote-unquote creative process, and that's what a producer does.
Yeah.
So it should be really interesting.
And just one thing to highlight. So I was just mentioning, he just finished yesterday a record for an amazing new artist called Nothing Nowhere.
It's acoustic, right?
Kind of. It's like clean guitars, okay. But there's some like trap hip hop beats in it. It's weird. It's kind of like Brand New Devil and God meets Drake.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, the kid's first tour was the Thrice La Dispute tour last year. And there's some really big stuff planned in the background that can't be discussed yet. But I think it's some of
Synergy group, right?
It is a synergy group, right. I think it's some of the best stuff that Eric's ever worked on. So I we just can't wait for that to be released into the world. So check that project out if you haven't yet, because you'll be hearing about it soon.
You'll be hearing it everything, everywhere.
Oh, nice.
Zing!
Well done.
Thank you. I was planning that. I knew that you were going to bring that up, and I had that in the barn burner.
Hey.
No, I didn't.
Hey.
King of dad jokes. So I guess, you know, do you have, I don't know if this is something you're apprehensive about, but do you have any stories from behind the scenes that you think would be interesting to the people listening?
Man, I wish I...
Besides our meeting at Swingers. Like, yeah. I'm sure you have something really, really meaty.
No, nothing really comes to mind, to be honest.
Well, then my next question is, what's it like with Element One?
Sure. Yeah. Just jumping into that.
I mean, if you don't have, I don't want to have a lull.
If I come up with something in the middle.
Yeah. Just interrupt yourself.
Just switch gears. Okay. But, I mean, working at Element One's been great. It's been, I think, a little over a year now. And Element One is a small boutique management company. There's three managers, including myself. Our boss is Chris Waldman, who does...
Wait, what's his last name?
Waldman.
I just similar to mine. That's all.
Waldman. That's true. Exactly. Yeah. So he does 21 pilots, and it's been amazing to be around that and have someone of his caliber to bounce ideas off of and learn from. And, you know, with pilots getting busier and busier, that means Chris gets busier and busier, and you know, just
is that the only band he manages? 21 Pilots?
That is his main focus. But he also does a rapper called NF.
Okay.
That is doing some really great stuff right now, and he also does the band Family Force 5, which is right.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you heard that name in a while.
I think their main singer is no longer a part of the project, and they got way more electronic. They used to kind of have the whole rap rock thing there.
Exactly. Yeah. I think they're kind of more going into the, you know,
Christian
the Christian route, you know, the different festivals.
For Ruben and Waldman, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Exactly. You know, the other manager that we have is Mike Ferry, and he's in upstate New York, and he's previously of the band We Are the In Crowd.
We were discussing them earlier.
He still manages Tay from that band, who is now going by Saint, as well as Against the Current.
So he's got the female pop rock on lockdown.
He's got the female pop rock on lockdown, exactly. So, you know, it's the three of us, and, you know, Chris works from his home office in Huntington. Mike's in New York, so, you know, a lot of it is remote. There has been, you know, discussions about getting into an office together in the next 6 months. And hopefully as Pilots kind of winds down and finishes a last leg on their emotional roadshow tour in Australia, you know, Chris will have a little bit more bandwidth to kind of get some of these ideas together. But right now I'm actually working out of an office on Melrose and Fairfax area in LA, and it's a shared space. So it's been really nice. I'm working with, you know, Yvonne and Lisa at Synergy are in there. Derek Brewer at Outer Loop is in there. Michelle Abrams, who does Pierce the Veil, is in there. So it's a really nice group of people. And even though we work at different companies, it's nice to kind of have a sense of camaraderie and...
No, you're in it together.
Yeah.
That's the one thing, because for the bands that I manage, it's all me, and it's in my apartment. But with the producers I manage, I co-manage them with Ross Roby, so it's really good to have someone to springboard and bounce ideas.
It really is. And when I moved up to LA from Long Beach, you know, I was working from home for the first chunk of it, and I just didn't like it. I like getting up and going to a place to work.
You're more motivated that way.
You're more motivated. There's no, you know, sense of like, oh, my day starts, my first call is, you know, and I love that. So I wouldn't trade that for the world. You know?
And it's also close to where you live.
Yeah. Well, relatively.
Relatively. I guess L.A. close.
Yeah.
Like as Cher, Alicia Silverstone said in Clueless, everything in L.A. is 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
is
yeah.
not true.
I can attest to that.
So I guess I'll ask you one more question before we close out, and I will not answer this phone call. So there's a lot of people listening to the show that really want to break into the industry somehow, be it have their own radio show, be it work in A&R. You are a manager, a successful one. What do you recommend for the average person trying to? Because you even started working in a completely different facet of the industry, and now you're doing something by yourself.
Sure. I mean, I guess to touch on a thing I mentioned earlier, some advice would be try to look at the music industry from different perspectives and intern as much as possible in different areas. So, you know, see what it's like to put on shows as a promoter. See what it's like working at a label and having kind of like a roster in front of you that, you know, it's your duty to work on. And then, you know, management side, it's kind of a little bit more entrepreneurial because you can get involved with acts that you love and, you know, it's kind of like you carve your own destiny type of thing. You know, look at it from the agency side and figure out where exactly you want to carve your niche and you know, kind of dig further in. I think it takes not a certain personality to work in music, but...
Patience,
sure, patience. And as far as management specifically, and even though this sounds like a total soundbite and it may be a little cliche, as a manager, there's just a few things you kind of have to be prepared for. One of those things is acknowledging that as a manager, you're oftentimes the last to be thanked when things are going right. You're oftentimes the first to be blamed when things are going wrong. And that's kind of just something that goes along with the gig. I mean, you're essentially overseeing the project.
Sometimes you're not even thanked.
I mean, yeah, luckily, like, everyone I work with is super appreciative of the time that everyone on the team puts in. It's just kind of like a scenario where, as a manager, your job is to oversee the entire project, and if something isn't working, it's your job to identify that and make a change so everyone can reach your goals. I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, it's kind of something that comes with the gig, and it's not like a very much of a, you know, close your laptop at 5 p.m. and you're done for the day. It's more of a 24/7 gig in the sense that, you know, a fire that you need to put out could be happening at any time, and, you know,
you're like a doctor without saving lives.
Exactly. You know, or like, you know, dealing with international, you know, calls or an international team, whatever it is. Another thing that I guess would be some advice, and this is something that a manager, Mike Kaminsky, said to me once that really resonated. And, you know,
Tonight
Mike
Alive,
Kaminsky,
right?
Of K Management, right? He does Tonight Alive and,
Somerset. 303.
Thank you. Yeah.
I have to study this shit.
He does Neck Deep. I mean, yeah, so he's a really influential manager. And one thing that he said that really resonated with me was make sure that you are a proactive manager rather than a reactive manager. I think it's easy for a lot of people to kind of settle into the space where, you know, the emails come in, you kind of sort through opportunities that are either presented to you or at arm's reach. And being proactive is about waking up in the morning and thinking, you know, what is it that I could do to move the needle for my artist today? And picking up the phone and not being afraid.
Don't use the word needle with artists anymore on this show.
You know, it's about picking up the phone and making the ask. Because a lot of people just don't ask. And referring to another thing earlier, it's surprising how positively people in this industry respond to someone that is grinding and wanting to carve out a space for themselves in this business on behalf of their artists. Pick up the phone, you know, ask people for help. Offer to buy lunches, be sincere about it, and grind. And eventually you will wake up one morning and find yourself in a place where there are people that you can call if you need a favor. There are people that you know, you can go to lunch with and bounce ideas off of. And seeing things come together for your artists after
I emailed Eric Tobin Blind when I first started the management company, who is, for people listening, is the A&R guy at Hopeless Records. And it's amazing that if you have something that's a good product, no matter how big or small someone is, they will respond to you.
Yeah, it's very insane. Very often they do, for sure. If you're sincere and, you know, you have your foot
right
in the door and you do it right. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't ask, and I guess that would be my advice, is it's a bit of a scary world to, you know, look from the outside in on, but once you get started and you keep at it and you're persistent, you know, you'll find that, you know, you'll start achieving your goals, in time. So, I mean, myself included, if anybody listening, you know, wants to reach out, I'm happy to, you know, listen to music and say hello and whatever it is.
So. Well, that's awesome to hear. We're going to close out this show with that. Again, Mr. Daniel Rubin, another fist pound. thank you so much for coming to the dregs of North Hollywood for this wonderful interview. Like I said, we've got Megan Thompson from Hopeless. I feel like this show should have been sponsored by Hopeless today. We've got Johnny Minardi from Equal Vision the following week, Bruce Duff from Knitting Factory Records / Management, and Mark and Eric from Word is Bond Management. Every single Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time, so while you're in L.A. traffic, you could download the Adobe app and you can listen to us. Or 8 o'clock on the East Coast, you can enjoy your really good pizza. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I guess if you have any final thoughts, Sam, or forever hold their peace.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. I had a great time.
Aw, I like that. Bye!